I see there's an amendment, what appears to be an author's
there's
amendment.
There's an author's amendment. Should I could do with that first? We can do that.
Can I move that amendment for you, President Watson?
I would appreciate that.
Okay. And in favor of incorporating the amendment into House File 1183, in favor,
Mr. aye? Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
It needs a page and line. Mr. Helland suggests page 10 after line 25.
Okay,
do
you get that, Mr.
Helland? Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right, all in favor, aye?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Now, Mr. Walker, continue with 1183 as amended.
Great. This was brought to me as the transfer of current responsibilities from one state agency to another. In recent days, it's come to my attention that not only does it take the statutes from the Department of Agriculture and put them in the statutes of the Department of Natural Resources, but it does make some changes in those statutes, which have gotten some people a little concerned, and we're going to keep working on that. It's, I think, mainly just they've shortened some of the provisions that are more detailed in the Department of Ag statutes, and I think we need to just make sure that people are comfortable that it is truly those same responsibilities and same programs that are being transferred. And this all has to do with how we as a state prepare to deal with tree pests. Tree pests are bugs that infect our forests and our trees, and unfortunately take us from this sort of a tree to this sort of a tree. And we're all familiar with Dutch elm, but the new ones are even worse. Emerald ash borer, which is coming over from the east, it's right now heavily into Michigan, Illinois, Ohio, and Wisconsin is expected to be the next major infestation. Emerald ash borer will take over a lot of the tree cover of Minnesota if it does get established. Michigan has to date spent $300 million in a losing battle against this. Other states have had a much better success at containing it. And if you look at the handout that in your packet, this has the ash per acre and the ash population per municipality. And you'll see that there's not a single part of Minnesota hardly that isn't at risk here. It is a dominant tree cover in many parts of our state. And if we're able to develop an effective detection, early response capability, it's our hope that we'll be able to contain and eradicate this. But it's going to mean a lot of eyes on the trees and a lot of work doing that. The tree pest itself is tiny. It's smaller than a penny. It's beautiful when you see it enlarged, but the hole that it makes is actually the top branches of the tree, and so it's very difficult to detect until you start to see that tree dying back. Current methods of control tend to deal with cutting down healthy trees in an area around the damaged tree, which always becomes controversial. I've watched many people cry as that elm tree gets taken down, but it's even harder when you're taking down a healthy tree in a nearby area. The Department of Ag and the Department of Natural Resources have worked out a division of responsibilities where the Department of Agriculture will have responsibility for the emerging pest, detecting it when it comes here, eradicating it, trying to control it. If at some point it becomes widespread, like Dutch elm, and an established colony, such that all parts of Minnesota and all trees in Minnesota are at risk, then the Department of Natural Resources takes over as a management responsibility. I have a bit of experience in planning for pandemic influenza and bioterrorism outbreaks, and I know how complicated it is to have people have to deal with sudden outbreaks that have major response, or you end up with the infection spreading more and more. We end up in a situation like Michigan where you end up spending hundreds of millions of dollars and you're still not sure if you can control it. I'm hoping that we can avoid that in Minnesota, but it's going to take more than just our state agencies. It's going to take our local governments. It's going to take volunteers. It's going to take a complete plan of action for how we respond. And so the amendment that you put on proposes a task force that would work through the Minnesota Forest Resources Council to establish a forest protection plan for how we will educate the public not only about what emerald ash borer is and other tree pests, but how they can plan to effectively, as a community, respond, what the authorities are going to be, what the responses will be. People are much more willing to accept the necessary actions if they've heard about it in advance. But if you're just sitting at your lake cabin and suddenly find out that somebody's going to come and proposing to come and mow down your trees, you're probably not going to be very receptive if you don't have some basis of understanding. This would also deal with clarifying state and local roles and dealing with the financial aspects of if we do have to start taking down trees, who's going to pay for it, on what basis, how will the property owners be notified. And so this starts to have a comprehensive effort that would come before us again next year with a more complete plan for if we start to find these bugs in our forest and we have to start dealing with it, how we can contain it effectively. I'm all about prevention. I don't want to lose the trees of Minnesota. And I think that having an effective plan, when we get that first outbreak, talking to the Department of Agriculture, they don't think it's a matter of if, it's when. And we have a little bit of time simply because it's been slowly moving towards here, but we need to be prepared. Both the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Agriculture are here to answer questions. And with that, I will await the questions from the committee.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
I raised my hand.
You didn't. I guess I should ask you if you'd yield. You're the nursery guy on here. Tell us about what your experience or what your knowledge is on these little pesky buggers.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is really serious stuff. This is unbelievable, the seriousness of this pest. If we get this, as Representative Loeffler said, this will just be huge. And I guess... Representative Loeffler's done a great job of explaining. This is really, really serious stuff. I mean, the devastating effect already to the nursery industry in the upper Great Lakes, including Minnesota, has been really huge. Many small nurseries, like the one that my son now owns, have thousands of ash trees in their nursery that they will not be able to sell because people don't want to plant ash trees because it was the most popular tree planted after Dutch elm. And now to have this potential disease is really kind of scary. I guess, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, how about the agencies? I have some questions about the bill. I'm wondering, are the agencies and... I know you have a history of running a tight ship. If I could ask, what's your timing thoughts, Mr. Chair, on how long we're going to spend on this bill?
Well, I think Representative McNamara and to the author, Representative Loeffler, it's all our bills are pretty important, but thinking about what the mitigation is for once this thing, I was once told by someone that if an ash borer infested tree is found, that it essentially is removing trees for a wide, wide radius. I mean, as much like a half a mile, and I guess I'd like to hear from Mr. Tomlinson or someone from the department that could tell us about that. That sounds pretty... if you removed all the ash trees in a half a mile of my house, you'd take about half the trees that are anywhere in sight. I mean, they'd all be gone. And so I'd like to hear from the department, someone or some... nursery people or whoever would like to come forward and give us a little more information on that. I think it's important that we kind of flesh this out right now. Your name and who you represent, and then go ahead.
Mr. Chair, my name is Geert Friso. I'm the Director of the Plant Protection Division with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And you're correct, and Representative McNamara is correct, that emerald ash borer is an extremely serious threat to Minnesota forests. I do want to point out that the Department of Agriculture retains authority to do the early eradication and exclusion of those types of pests. That authority does not transfer over to the Department of Natural Resources. And Mr. Chair, you're correct. If we found a point source of emerald ash borer in the state of Minnesota, we would be very aggressive in trying to remove and eradicate that point. If it was determined that there was a very large and widespread infestation, frankly, we would have to rethink our strategy. There has been a Emerald Ash 4 strategic plan that has been developed, and the agencies have been working together very closely for nearly 2 years now to think through the whole process with Emerald Ash 4.
Well, I have a question. If I suppose the emerald ash borer can live in firewood, ash firewood that's been harvested. Wonder for how long, and is that a threat? I know that one of our favorite places up north is to harvest firewood, is in a beaver pond that's flooded and killed the ash, and it's standing there dry. kind of an innocent bystander of the process, and I'm just thinking about how it could come in and firewood or something like that, even though the tree had been cut for some time. How does that all play into this?
Well, Mr. Chair, and you probably are well aware that the Department of Natural Resources has proposed some restrictions to the movement of firewood. I would also mention that there is a federal quarantine against the movement of any ash species, firewood or nursery stock or anything else, from areas that are infested with emerald ash borer. But more to your point of your question, how long that wood, if I would say if it's less than 2 years old, there is a threat not only from emerald ash borer but other plant pests. Anytime you have the bark still on the wood, or it's fairly moist, that tends to be attractive to a number of pests and pathogens.
Okay. Anyone else? Ms. Thomason, you'd like to come forward? Thank you very much. We may have you back up in a moment. Go ahead with your name and who you represent, Ms. Thomason.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bob Thomason. I'm with the DNR Division of Forestry. I just want to emphasize, I know it's the obvious thing to do it, you kind of gravitate towards the discussions around emerald ash borer and other, and those pests because of the potential devastation that they could bring to Minnesota. And we are very interested in keeping up. But I want to emphasize that this bill basically kind of would set up the framework, if you will, on how we would manage those types of pests along with our partners in the MDA and others in that. And it does several things that I basically look at would be enabling types of legislation. It's not a funding bill. It's basically an alignment bill, if you will, that it puts more impetus on the division, on the DNR, to do certain things and leaves some things and reinforces them with agriculture over there. So I just want to try and keep, I'm suggesting that we need to try and be understanding of that broad context that we bring the bill for. This is a department bill. I recognize that Representative Loeffler has some concerns with it, and we are committed to working out any suggestions that she has relative to those to make things more clear and defined that as we need to as we're going through the committees over here. So.
Well, this is my question. Thank you very much, Mr. Thomason. My question would be, although this is a policy committee, I'm thinking about the policy of having the Forest Resources Council take over this representative group. Representative Loeffler, I suppose you have discussed this concept with the Forest Resources Council and that they have the wherewithal and the financial means to do this.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have talked to Dave Zabetta, who is the executive director, but the council has not discussed it and taken a formal position, and we're going to need to do some further discussion before this ever gets to a finance committee. One of the reasons that I felt that it was useful to have a task force working on this and to really make sure that things are clarified, because as the committee has just discussed, if we have an outbreak and we're going to take down healthy trees, potentially for a half-mile circumference, we're going to have a lot of really unhappy tree owners. And the current provisions in notice, for example, are that you publish it for 2 weeks in a row in the legal publication of the county in which the infestation arises. That's not going to sit well with people who live in other parts of the state who might own 80 acres of hunting land or might have a cabin up in that area who won't get advance notice through that kind of a process. We need to look at what are the difficulties or ease of actually notifying property owners themselves within that zone. I think we're going to need to get the word out so that if people are buying trees, that we really get a diversified forest and that we don't have people taking, planning for these kind of changes, because this is just one type of bug that's threatening our forest. We have gypsy moth, as you know, up in your area. There's other ones in other parts of the country. And I took time to read the Government Accounting Office big, thick report on a postmortem of six other states and how they lost control or what went right and what went wrong with these tree pests of different types that came in. Number one, they all came in through an urban or developed area. Most of our eyes on the trees are obviously in our state forests and our national forests, which are not near developed or urban areas. Number two, by the time they figured it was out in the urban area or the developed area, it had already leapfrogged out to other parts of the area. So it was already in places that we hadn't that the state hadn't anticipated. And third, the thing that they saw over and over again was that a lot of valuable time was lost when local government and various state agencies fought with each other about who was in charge and what was the authority and how clear was it. And you get lawyers involved on all sides, and in the end you end up in court instead of taking care of the problem. And so my thought is that we ought to really look at what has worked effectively in these other states, which have much more experience than we have, and hopefully we'll never have to use it. But I would think a good plan is a good basis on which to prepare, and we can learn from what these other states have gone through, and that's my intent, is just to look at what they've done, what's worked, what hasn't, and make sure that our system looks like it'll be as effective or more effective.
Okay, well, Representative Loeffler, this is going to Chair Eakin's committee, and then I expect that before the day is done, it'll be in finance as well. Mm-hmm. I hope before we get to finance, we can have something from Mr. Zemeta on them taking over the responsibility for this.
I will definitely work with them to make sure that input is provided.
Okay, questions from Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and my question goes along those same lines. I would hope, Representative Loeffler, that both with the Department of Ag and the DNR Forestry, that we have the discussion about whether or not we're prepared for this real tragedy that could be before us, and what the economic cost would be immediately, and do we have any preparedness financially for that, for the cost to remove these trees, for the campaign to let people know what is going on. I just think that we're coming up way short, and I want to make sure as we make this change from Department of Ag to DNR that we're not shortchanging along the way, losing any of the institutional agency knowledge so that we don't get caught in the transfer. I mean, I think we can work with this idea of moving some of these things to DNR, but I want to make sure that we're prepared, because we're doing this at a time when there's some pretty scary things with both gypsy moth and emerald ash borer before us. So I know you and I talked specifically earlier today about that, and I appreciate your concern and your working with it, and you're very aware of the issue. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Questions from the committee, balance of the committee? There being none, anyone in the audience like to testify for or against the bill? Does not appear that there are any. Again, at that point, do you have anything else you'd like to add, Representative Loeffler?
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say thank you, and I welcome the input and feedback of all members of the committee and the audience as we prepare to deal with something that I hope we never have to implement the preparation plans for.
Well, Representative Loeffler, I'd really like you to stay in working contact with Representative McNamara on this bill, because he's kind of our resident tree guru, at least on this committee. So with that in mind, and did you bring all the trees that are up there for before us on the...
Mr. Chairman, I always believe that when you have a 4 o'clock hearing, you need to have something that just seems a little out of the ordinary, and I hope that the chocolates have circulated or will be soon.
Well, Miller Genuine would have been good, too, but...
Ms.
Representative Hagbard.
I think Representative Loeffler got the wrong message. She was supposed to bring treats, not trees.
There you go. Mr. Meyer, did you want to comment on this bill? Okay.
And Representative Hagbard, there actually are chocolate leaves that I think are circulating at this point up
here. Great. Thank you.
All right. With that, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 1183, as amended, recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. That's Chairman Eakin's committee. Discussion on the motion? There being none. In favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you very much. All right. The next bill we have before us, other than the treats that are coming around. Thank you very much, Representative Loeffler.
Certainly.
This is House File 1228, and this is a bill that I'm carrying. Senator Bach is carrying on the other side. I have an amendment. Now, first, I'd like to move the bill, House File 1228, get it before us. And the motion is to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. So I'll make that motion. And then I have the A1 amendment, the H1228A1 amendment, to get the bill in the shape that we want it to be in. All in favor of that motion, the A1 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, House File 1228 as amended. Now, members, this bill, right now, presently, the lake trout season in Minnesota is 2 weeks longer in the Boundary Waters canoe area than it is outside the Boundary Waters canoe area. There's lakes along the border that are very well suited for lake trout, and a lot of them, if you think of geographically from like about International Falls and follow the border to the east, northeast, and down a little bit to just on the edge of the Iron Range, kind of the northern tier of my legislative district to be specific, there are a lot of trout lakes in there, both in the Boundary Waters and out of the Boundary Waters. And two of the communities came forward and said, you know, there aren't that many trout fishermen. They're very, very difficult to catch in the first place, and it would be very helpful to our communities if we had a season that was longer and longer and at least matched the Boundary Waters. Now, members, the reason it was explained to me by the department that they have a longer season in the Boundary Waters is because of the harder access, because as you well know, it's non-motorized in the Boundary Waters, and so it's harder for trout fishermen to get in there. So they, at some point along in history, they've extended the season, or they shortened it in the outside the boundary. I don't know whether they extended it in the Boundary Waters or shortened it outside the Boundary Waters. So this bill would make the same length of season, both in and out. Now, I'm certain the department will come up and talk about this bill, so I'd like to let them do that. Mr. Meyer, you want to come forward? I don't have a gun with me either, so.
Mr. Chair, members, that's a good thing. Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources Assistant Committee. Just trying to engross this amendment in here. So what you're saying is on lines 1.12 for lake trout on lakes during the winter, and then it would read from the Saturday nearest January 1st to March 31st, basically extending the lake trout fishing season through March 31st throughout the entire state. Is that your intent, Mr. Chair?
That's correct, Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, when this bill was introduced, we did discuss with the author the situation, and we need a little bit of time to figure out what this is going to do to the populations and the fishing and everything else like that. I would like to work with the author to try to make us or have us come back with some recommendations on this change, or else if you'd like to lay it over for possible inclusion in the Game of Fish Bill, we could work on that still this session.
Well, Mr. Meyer, that is the motion to be laid over for possible inclusion. And members, I did hear from the department and from Mr. Meyer and from someone at the department, and Mr. Bogus, I believe. And what they'd like to do is have some time to look at this. So I thought I'd bring the bill before us, hear the testimony, lay the bill over, see if we can't work something out. Even if it were let's say we went as far as having some kind of a study and a report back to the legislature on your findings, before we actually adopted something, you know, maybe next year or the year after. So, with your indulgence, unless we'd like to hear further testimony, I think that's the direction we're going with this bill.
We would support that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
And so we'll just lay it over the amendment. This won't be engrossed as, you know, as I understand, it'll stay as the original bill. And the amendment will still be on because we've adopted that, but it won't be going anywhere. So is there anyone here that came today to testify for or against the bill? Okay, with that, I'll renew my motion to lay the bill over. Yeah. Thank you very much. And Representative Hagmartha, we're not going to vote on that since it was laid over. I'm learning slowly. Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
The next bill is House File 32, Representative Hagmartha. This is about the walk-in provisions, And you want to move your bill and also to then move your amendment, the 0129 amendment? You have a couple of amendments, it looks like.
Mr. Chairman, I have just one amendment. I would like to move House File 32 to bring it before us. And I believe the correct motion would be to hold it over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill.
That is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that. And I have the A07-0129 amendment is the amendment that I would like to move, Mr. Chairman.
That gets the bill in the shape you would like it?
That's correct. And I would speak to the amendment, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman. The amendment is very similar to the bill, but the Senate had made some changes when they heard the bill in committee, and I drafted a previous amendment to include those changes that I did agree with, and but then I realized that we needed to put some other legislation in here that said, much like the state has an exemption to, if you're on WMA land hunting, and you go on that property, you're exempt from any lawsuits or any liability. So we put a paragraph at the very, very end in Subdivision 2 that said that these walk-in access private property would have that same liability. And if there needs to be any changes to these statutes, 604A.20 to .27, we would have to do that. So that's simply what the amendment does, Mr. Chairman. Brings it into the same shape as what the Senate is working from, and also adds those four lines at the end of the bill.
All right, to the 0129 amendment. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted to House File 32 as amended. Representative Hackbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a walk-in access program plan. I've been trying to work with the DNR over the years, and we've had a little bit of disagreement, but from what I understand, they're working towards achieving that goal now. I think we need to move forward with this legislation to make sure that the plan gets done. So it's very, very simple legislation, Mr. Chairman, that just says that the DNR will come up with a plan. I've talked to Mr. Bogus about this, and it looks like they would come up with a plan and then maybe implement a small pilot project to see how it might work. And I think that's kind of the direction the DNR would want to go, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. That pretty much wraps up the bill.
Thank you, Representative Hackbar. We have another amended.
Representative Hansen, a question about the bill.
Yes, I have a question. This has the Commissioner of Natural Resources preparing a plan. What's the cost of preparing the plan, and where does the funding come from for that?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, we might have to bring the DNR down to talk about that. I think there's staff on hand that does this sort of thing that can do this without any additional cost to the budget. I think they do these sorts of plans. I think they look into these kinds of things. And I think it's not going to cost any additional money. We have staff on hand to take care of these kinds of things.
Is there someone from the DNR who could speak to Representative Hansen's question?
Madam Chair, members, Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for DNR. Representative Hackbarth was correct when he said that we've been thinking about this for a while. This was the subject of a roundtable, a wildlife roundtable in 2001, and after that roundtable, we convened a group of people to develop a proposal for a pilot walk-in access program, and there was in fact a proposal that resulted from that process. The recommendations of the group that we convened, it was a coalition of various conservation organizations, was that a walk-in program not take away from any other programs, that if we're going to have a walk-in program, that it have its own funding source identified. And in particular, they did not want to see private land access program take away from our acquisition program for our WMA system, which has been a very big item for us the last few years, had a lot of citizen support, and we've gotten a tremendous amount of support from the legislature in terms of bonding bills. So there was a proposal developed for a pilot walk-in program. It would have tried this out in Minnesota. One of the things that we found is that these types of programs, as we look across the country, work pretty well to the west of us and don't work so well to the east of us. In Minnesota, maybe right on the line where, because of land use, we don't have a lot of small grain and grassland, and land cost and the number of people that we have. There's some question how well this program would work in Minnesota, so it would make sense to do a pilot program. As we've seen the legislation this year, in both houses, we've said that we really don't feel like we need some of the bills as they were initially introduced would have given us till December 31st of 2008 or January 15th of 2009, and we've said we really feel like we have essentially this plan done already. It's just a matter of updating it. There will be some staff time involved in this, so there certainly will be some cost, but we aren't going to add any staff or do any contracting or anything like that to do this plan.
Thank you, Mr. Bogus. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bogus, so where would the staff be coming from that would be working on this?
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, our farmland wildlife person in St. Paul, who deals with pheasant and prairie chicken and other wild turkey, other farmland wildlife programs, would be working with our farmland research staff down in Medelia, who have done the initial pilot walk-in program proposal back in 2000 and January of 2002. Those two primarily would be working on updating what we did in 2002.
Representative Bugnia. Thank you. We're going to have a program to voluntarily make land available. I'm assuming that, and we're talking about entering into contracts, you must have an idea about what per acre this would cost taxpayers.
Mr. Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, we have some idea based on some other states' programs. South Dakota has about 1 million acres signed up in their program. It's about a $2.1 million a year program. We think it's going to cost considerably more than that per acre in Minnesota, maybe in the range of $10 an acre or something like that. But until we try a pilot program and see what kind of interest there is from landowners, I guess we won't know for sure how this would work or how much it would cost.
Representative Williams.
If you're looking at $10 an acre per for a contract payment, is that sufficient to cover the increased cost of insurance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, I don't know if there would be an increased cost of insurance or, you know, each landowner is going to have to make this decision for themselves if they want to sign up to allow public access to their private property under this program. And like I say, South Dakota, of course, they have vast acreages of grassland and fairly low cash rental rates and things like that, but they've signed up 1 million acres for about $2 an acre, including their staff costs.
Mr. Bogus, just to that point, Representative Wagenius, do the snowmobile, when you give a permit for a snowmobile trail, there's some provisions in law that take you out of the liability loop. Do those same type of things, would they apply to something like this where someone has provided their land for, say, a hunter walking access program or some other access program, do those same liability exclusions extend to these programs, or would we have to specifically? Representative Hagbarth seems like he wants to answer that question, maybe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Subdivision 2 of the amendment that we added takes care of that. We put those statutes here that if this walking access program needs any changes to those statutes, that they would be required to have to make those changes.
That's the 604?
That's correct, and they should it should be covered under those statutes, the way I read the statutes.
Okay, Representative Guinness.
I'm not understanding how you could not make landowners not exposed to additional liability. I mean, that my insurance company, okay, we have a farm, and we let two different groups hunt there. And their neighbors, and we're really careful about who hunts there, and it's for liability purposes. And we don't get any money for this. This is, you know, neighbors hunting on your land. However, if I signed a contract with somebody to say people could hunt on my land, I am then earning money from it. My insurance company has to know that. Now, the question is, for my insurance company, are they going to raise my rates? They sure are. And so, I mean, I can't imagine my insurance company not raising rates. And if this is to say that landowners aren't exposed to liability because the state is taking on liability, that's unconstitutional in Minnesota. State cannot take on liability under our constitution. So I'm not understanding this.
Mr. Helen is going to give us a briefing on those particular citations.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it relates to recreational land use and formerly was in the DNR statutes and then was transferred to the civil liability limitations says that an owner who gives written or oral permission for the use of his or her land for recreational purposes without charging for that doesn't owe any duty of care to render the land safe for entry or use for the recreational purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So this law has been in effect in Minnesota for 25 or 30 years, and I don't know the specific answer to your question, Representative Wagenius, about the constitutional problem, possible problem. But I think the plan will have some recommendation about whether these statutes would need to be changed in order for this walk-in program to actually work.
When listening to that and thinking about snowmobile trail permits, we don't pay my trail system, we don't pay the owners anything for it. It says right on it, for goodwill. That's what it says on the permit. It says for goodwill, for consideration of goodwill. Now, I wonder with through just thinking about this, is the payment of a like a per dollar per acre, you suggested $10 per acre, does that then take out that provision, and would we need to, I'm thinking Representative Hagbarth, would we need to slightly tweak how that works in order to make this work? Well, I think we're in agreement that we want what we have in law to work, but we probably don't have in law what we need to work in this instance, but near it.
Mr. Chairman, and that's what the bill says now, that they shall include any changes to these statutes that are necessary to make this work. That's what the bill says, is that the DNR should come forward with any changes to these statutes to make this work.
All right, and I guess my question is when would those changes be brought forward to be put into law?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be when they need to present the report to us by January of 2008, and I think Mr. Helen has something to add.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm just wondering if there's a typo on 1.22. It says under subdivision 3, And I wonder if you mean subdivision one there. Mm-hmm. There isn't a subdivision three. Oh, that's in the report on the next page. I'm sorry.
Right.
Okay. All right. Excuse me.
Okay, so that I understand, when they come back with their report, they would report on what is necessary to make that 604 work in this particular instance. Is that, Representative McGinnis, you following that?
I'm following it.
Okay. All right. Further questions, Representative Simpson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had quite a few constituents talk to me up in my country because of just what you talked about earlier, and that being land costs and private ownership. In the district I come from, we have very little open hunting land, and I think that there's a kind of a pent-up demand for this type of thing because we have a lot of people going to North Dakota and South Dakota and seeing this in place out there. And I think this study is a good first step towards getting there, and I'm glad we're looking at it because if we're going to continue to get youth involved in hunting and moving forward into the future, they have to have access to hunt. And we're just tying up so much of our property in private ownership that it's going to eliminate it. So I think it's a good bill.
We have, thank you, Representative Simpson. We've got a couple more questions from the committee. Representative Simpson's point, you know, I very actively hunt in North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. And each of those, more North Dakota and more Nebraska, but South Dakota as well, have a book. I mean, it's a bound book of every county, of every piece of property. And, I mean, we just take the book and go hunting. And in North Dakota, we went in December on a duck hunt and never talked to a property owner. And we were able to go to all the plots fields and had wonderful hunting and no competition. It was a great thing. I'm really encouraged. However, I do think it will probably be more expensive in Minnesota, thinking about how the land is not as maybe abundant, abundantly available, maybe is the right word for it. It'll probably be more expensive. So, Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the idea behind the bill, actually. In Norway, it's a national law that you have to allow people to walk and camp basically anywhere other than within 100 meters of a house. But I'm still confused about the liability law. And so basically, private landowners don't have liability if they allow people without paying. But under this plan, we would presume some sort of payment to the landowners.
Well, Representative, I think I understand it as you are correct. If someone right now under present statute didn't get paid anything and voluntarily enrolled their land, they would fall under the 604 chapter that Representative Helen read to us. But because they get paid, there's the question of whether the 604 chapter applies, and that we, in this report, that Representative Hackworth in Section 2 of the amendment, I think it's Section 2, is going to require the DNR to tell us what parts of that 604 need to be amended so that it would cover someone who took a stipend payment for the use of their land. Okay, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Vargas, I noticed that some of the states, including South Dakota, have some type of surcharge. I was wondering, in the states that are using surcharges, do those surcharges cover the additional costs, land acquisition, potential liability costs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I'm not familiar in detail with how those programs work, but I think they certainly were designed with the idea that the surcharge or that the charge would cover the cost. That that's one of the factors that limits how much they can sign up. And certainly, if we ever went from a plan and a proposal or even a pilot program to an operational program, we would want to have some identified way of funding that that program ahead of time so that we weren't taken away from other high priorities.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, to that point, Mr. Boggess, if we did have thinking out into the future, we did have some kind of a surcharge or something to help pay for that program, then would that increase our federal monies correspondingly? Pittman Robertson and the other different, or is there a cap on that?
There is a cap because there's a national pool of that money that's divided up among the states. So it would not affect our federal money. It would perhaps be a program that we could use to get reimbursement, but we already have
an adequate amount.
Yeah, excess capacity in that area.
Okay, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think following up on all the conversation that's occurred, there are costs and benefits in the plan. I think it's good to have a plan for looking at access because, as has been mentioned before, there's a lot more no trespassing signs that are going up, and it's harder for folks to be able to get access. I would like to move the A070163 amendment, which I think addresses a couple of issues relating to the plan and also provides a blank appropriation for it, and I could speak to the amendment.
All right. Why don't you go ahead, Representative Hansen is bringing before us the 0163 amendment. Representative Hansen, if you go ahead and speak to the amendment.
Yes, what it does, members, is on line one, page one, line 13, it inserts costs and benefits that private land access would provide the public. And then line 1117, it talks about exploring the effectiveness and public and private cost of walk-in public access programs in other states. And then when it gets to the options in line 18, instead of saying program, it says program options. So there are multiple options that the DNR could come back with. And then it does put an appropriation in there as well, because when you have a program where somebody's going to develop a plan and have to look at each of these issues, there is going to be a cost to it. If staff are transferred from one, if their duties are transferred from one area to another, or they're reassigned for a short period of time, there still is a cost. So I have a dollar figure open appropriation here to enable the plan to be developed.
We're getting us to that point.
Yes, to that point, I would ask if Mr. Bogus has talked to your attorney, and do you have any idea how much legal research is involved here in looking at the constitutional question of liability if there were to be a charge? I mean, I understand the non-charge here, and that makes perfect sense to me, but if there were to be a charge, and essentially it looks like that landowners aren't exposed to additional liability, that means that the state is exposed. So, I mean, you can't just pretend there's no liability. So have you talked to your attorney about this, or is this something you ask the AG to do? I just don't know.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, we have not had any discussions with the Attorney General's office about this liability issue. I think the first thing we would do is look at how other states have handled this, if they've handled this, and how their laws or constitutions are similar or different than ours. But no, we have not had that discussion.
Thank you.
Well, our discussion, our constitution specifically does not allow us taking on liability without a funding stream. And I know the Attorney General's office spent a lot of time trying to teach me that when we were doing the landfill cleanup bill. So, I'm aware of it, and I'm aware that they do have some expertise on that.
Representative Hackbarth, do you have something about the amendment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd oppose the amendment. We heard testimony that this can be done without any extra charge, and I'm just against the amendment. I think it somewhat expands the bill and probably would involve more research, and I don't want this thing to cost the department any money, and I don't think we need to appropriate any money for it, so I'd be against the amendment.
To the amendment, Representative Peterson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Hansen and Representative Hackbarth. I'm just wondering, you've added potentially in here effectiveness and options and such. I know I speak from the favor of the amendment because I'm just making a sketch of a couple square mile area in my legislative district, which it all looks the same, but it's not in terms of tallgrass prairie habitat and upland wetlands. You know, you've got Nature Conservancy land that borders public access, that borders private land, that borders another public access that's up against a township road that then goes close down to a lake, which there's another private residence, which is then crossed over by a railroad track, and then after that you're in a refuge where there's no access by vehicle at all. Then across from that is another private pasture with Grace's cattle, and I'm just wondering, you've got this book you refer to in the Dakotas. Is it, do you have your GPS in your book and you know exactly what piece of land you're on? Or are we putting up signs? I mean, I'm thinking about the signs here. It says public access signs, and then there's Nature Conservancy signs, and then there's the prairie chicken sign, and then there's the one that says railroad private property, and then there's the one that says the refuge, where there's no vehicles allowed at all, and this is all occurring within about a 3-square-mile area. So are you, do you really know where you're walking in? Are we gonna have another green sign or a blue sign that says you can walk into this thing? Or does, I'm not familiar with this book you're referring to. Because I trust that you would know where you're going on the map. But some of the people that I see hunting in this three-mile area, I wouldn't trust that they know where they're going. I'm just wondering how this is going to be implemented, you know, effectively in this fragmented prairie wetland complex that's not as expansive as thousands and thousands of acres of rolling prairie in the Dakotas.
Okay. Well, Representative Peterson, at least in my experience, and I think that's something that the department is going to, in their work, is going to propose to us, but at each of the, actually have almost all of the above in the book that you get when you go to a sporting goods shop or somewhere to buy a license or get it on the internet or have it mailed to you. They actually have the GPS coordinates, they have the section, range, and township, and then when you arrive, at least at the places where I have hunted, which is many, in all three of those states that I mentioned, there are signs, like in North Dakota, there's a quite obvious orange sign, kind of a like a snowmobile trail sign that's orange, that says Plots, P-L-O-T-S on it. Mm-hmm. And it's on, you know, basically well marked all around the parcel. And some of those parcels are in Nebraska. We've hunted on some that were like 40 acres and then others that were a full section.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of the run of the mill of everything. And they've been very well marked, and I've never used my GPS to find them because usually they are well mapped. That book was just basically has the plat map and shows where the area is. So, I mean, I don't know how we're proposing it in Minnesota, but in those states, it's very, very simple. Now, a grant, and there's complex areas where we've been to, and there's been places, for example, the piping plover. There was in the Platte River, there's a plot section close to my land, and it's not called plots in Nebraska, but it's a public access, and you have access to it for wild turkey hunting and quail hunting, but yet, in that very stretch of the river, there's a restricted area because it's the habitat of the piping plover, which is an endangered bird of some. I've never even seen one, but seen the signs. So, Representative Hagbarth, to that point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Peterson. This bill doesn't do any of that. This bill is only for the DNR to come up with a plan. They're the ones that have said that they might do a pilot project should they come up with a plan, and this is just a plan to report back. This doesn't have anything to do with doing all the things that you said. I don't deny the fact that it's going to cost some money once we implement a plan. That is true, but that's not where we're at this point.
Well, Representative Bingham has been waiting very patiently. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Guinness was getting at this before, but kind of a direct question either to the author or to the DNR. So if I'm snowmobiling on this property and something gets damaged on the land, then whose problem is it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this is about public hunting and fishing access. This doesn't have anything to do with the snowmobiling. And under Section 604A.20, snowmobile trails and that are already covered in this language. It doesn't have anything to do about snowmobiles or any other kind of access in this bill. Those kind of liability issues are already covered in statute.
Mr. Chair.
Ma'am.
But it says related recreational activities.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. That's correct. And when you look under 604A20, that's what this is about, is other recreational activities. So those kinds of things are already covered in statute when you talk about trails and snowmobile trails. Those things are already covered in statute as far as liability is concerned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Representative Bing was also getting at any additional liability that might be incurred due to hunting or any other hunting-related activities. You know, we have those who use ATVs or four-wheelers for hunting, and so maybe you could comment on that question after mine. I support the program specifically. I have a lot of constituents who, where I live, there's mostly public land. I mean, we only have 30% of the land is taxable. The rest is public. But however, I had dinner with a guy on Saturday night as a longtime pheasant hunter, and so he was speaking about this legislation, hoping we would do something about it. My issue is, and I support Representative Hansen's amendment, in the department, Mr. Bogus, we asked you, we presented bills to you, and we asked for fiscal notes, and I frankly have a concern that the department is picking and choosing which bills that they provide fiscal notes for. And I think it's the legislature's responsibility to decide what programs specifically we'd like to do. And we would ask that you would then have some uniformity in deciding on what things get fiscal notes and what don't. And you've said explicitly that this is going to take staff time, and through conversations we find that it's probably going to take more staff time than we might be led to believe, and so I would ask you to for the department to have more regularity in what we get fiscal notes for, one, and two, that I think in order to do that we're going to have to include this amendment on the bill, even though I support the program. I think it potentially could be a solution for some folks who are really interested in pheasant and prairie chicken hunting specifically. So I don't know, maybe you want to comment on that, or
Representative Hackbart?
Well, if the issue was, you started off by talking about ATV access. The bill is all over the place talking about walk-in access. It doesn't talk about ATV riding or snowmobiling or anything like that. It's about a walk-in access program. So why we're talking about ATV access and snowmobiles and those sort of things are beyond me. It's a walk-in program.
Well, Mr. Chair, I might have clouded that up for Representative Bingham, because I was comparing the liability statute that's an existing law for snowmobiles to possible liability here. Representative Bingham?
Mr. Chair, I just needed clarification, and actually what Representative Moe was saying was true, is if you're running up to land, you know, we've spoken about using ATVs to drive up to land that you can maybe walk onto. I'm just wondering if there is any additional liability, and Representative Hackbarth answered that. So.
Okay, let's see. We have Representative Hoppe has been patiently waiting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you covered your answer, Representative Peterson, but I don't know how this would work. I know this is just to propose it, but I know in other states, in Montana, for example, there's no mistaking where you're going in, and it's another sign, but it's extremely clear. Once you get past that, then you're on your own, and you can get GPS software that will tell you, you know, if you're on the right side of the fence, you're good. If you go on the other side of the fence, you're not. But it's up to the individual there to know. I mean, they're not going to tell you when you're 5-6 miles from the gate where you went in. You've got to know on your own. And I would hope we'd do something like that and still hold people responsible for where they are in trespass and things like that.
To that point, Representative Peterson, I was... I'm not particularly have great stamina for walking for long, long distances. I like to post when I'm pheasant hunting, frankly. And I was at a Plotz field up in North Dakota, and the lake where we wanted to duck hunt was about 3/4 of a mile from where the closest edge was. And on all their signs, you can't, on the Plotz fields, you can't drive a motorized vehicle. So, I mean, I'm looking at about 5,000 mallards sitting on a lake, and I'm thinking about that 3/4 of a mile carrying all those decoys. You got to want to do it. And we did it, by the way. Anyway, let's see. We've got Representative Wagenius. You had a question?
Not a question. More of a comment. We have to put an appropriation in here just because there is this language that says any changes to Minnesota statute necessary to ensure that landowners are not exposed to additional liability as a result. This is a legal question. It's not a policy question. It's a legal question. it is going to take some discussion and work from the Attorney General staff to answer that question and to make sure that what you're doing is constitutional. It doesn't matter what any other state does because we all have different constitutions. So I don't think we can avoid not figuring out how much it's going to cost to have someone on the Attorney General's staff help out in this liability area.
Okay, Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, members, this is an interesting concept, trying to talk the DNR into taking money here. This is just a plan. I was hoping you would withdraw the amendment because I think an amendment with money being so tight is going to kill the bill. And this is just a plan. A lot of these questions will be answered in the plan. And as far as Attorney General, they're already on staff. They answer or make opinions for us all the time. And I wasn't aware that each time we shipped them a question, we had to, you know. But something like this, I think if you start attaching money and fiscal notes to it, it's got the less chance of survival. And I just wish you would let the process take place and come up with a plan and report back, because then we can decide how much money we're going to put or not into it. But what do you think about that, Representative Hansen? Would you be interested in withdrawing your amendment?
Representative Hansen.
I considered it, but I think I'd like to move forward just in finalizing summary of the amendment. I think when you look at the, not the appropriation, but the legislative language, it talks about cost-benefit analysis rather than just the benefits of the program, so we can get to some of these issues here. And it provides for program options, that they recommend options to us. And there may be a variety of options that are there rather than just one program. So I know that there's a variety of programs around the country. I believe the DNR has good staff and talented people that can check with folks. So I think that the statutory language is good for the amendment. But having worked in state government, like yourself, Representative Cornish, there's always a cost to things. And it's good to have those costs up front on what they are. It takes money to do things. And so I think it's important to have that appropriation and to move the bill along.
Well, Representative Hansen, I'm wondering, Ken, if let's just for the moment imagine that we divided that amendment into two pieces or struck Section 2. Would they be able to accomplish the, it seemed to me that they would be able to accomplish the goals down through line 1.7 without Section 2. They've told us that they could. Would it be more, do we have just a short discussion on the idea of striking Section 2 from the amendment and letting them go forward with these other provisions that are down to line 0.17?
Mr. Chair, I would be open to that if we were able to get a fiscal note on the cost of the plan and to take the appropriation off. If we, as this bill moves along, that we actually do see a fiscal note, I would be open to that division.
Ms. Braggis, can we accomplish what I'm trying to negotiate here?
Mr. Chair, we can certainly provide a fiscal note. I can't tell you right now tonight what that fiscal note's going to say. But
and you don't carry those in your pocket?
I carry some of them, Mr. Chairman, but I don't have one for this bill.
Do you want to, Representative Hansen, do you want to modify the amendment then, or would you like me to?
I would defer to the chair.
Well, then I would move to strike line 1.8 through 1.12 of the 0163 amendment, and then we would have discussion on that amendment to the amendment, and then vote on that amendment to the amendment, and then vote on the entire on the balance of the amendment that remains. So discussion on deleting Section 2. Representative Akbar?
I'm in favor of that amendment.
Anyone else?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Moe.
Mr. Chair, would this alter the path of this bill from the committee at all?
Well, actually, the Game and Fish bill, I think, will end up in Representative Wagenius's committee regardless of whether this appropriation language is in the bill or not, or whether that line is filled in.
So this is still where
the path of the bill would still, I anticipate, would remain the same. Does that sound right? Yeah, so it would go to Representative Wagenius's committee with or without this provision.
Thank
Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the amendment? All in favor of the amendment, aye?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail. Okay, now to the amendment as amended, which again, members, I'm going to align 1.1 through 1.7 is what is remaining of the amendment. Further discussion on the amendment? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail. All right. To the bill, House File 32, as amended, twice. Any further discussion, Representative Hackbarth? Any other members? Anyone here to testify for or against the bill? Representative Baga, or Mr. Bogus, anything else?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So Representative Hackbarth will renew his motion that the bill, House File 32, as amended, be held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill. Okay, very good. Thank you. See, I did it again. Didn't vote on the bill. All right. The next bill up is House File 632, Representative McNamara. Now, we're going to start into the lands bill, member, and we're going to hear each bill, and if there are amendments to those bills, we will then amend the bills, and then we will hold them over till the end of the meeting, and then at that time, we'll incorporate each of the bills individually by motion into the DNR's land bill. Any questions on that procedure? Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, is it your intent that we're going to lay this one over to be included in the lands bill, so this is not going to move to any other committees? I guess I didn't know if we're, did you and I have a, you know, I'm getting old, so I apologize. If we had a discussion about this, I wasn't aware of
it. We didn't, Representative McNamara, we have not discussed that. At this point, we're intending to hold it over and include it in the omnibus lands bill.
Okay, and
if there's a problem with that, why don't we discuss that, and then we can move it out at the next meeting separately.
And that would be fine, Mr. Chair. I more would be concerned if there was some controversy in here. Not that I foresee any, but if there was, I don't want to mess up your lands bill. It may have something in there.
But usually by the time the bill gets to the floor, it's controversial, no matter what bill it is. Okay. Especially when it has to do with lands. Representative Rukavina gave me specific orders on this bill, so. You know I follow everything he said.
All right. All right.
All right. The House File 632.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess I would like to move. Did you already move? Did you want me to move it? 632 for possible inclusion in the lands bill.
Okay, Representative McNamara moves House File 632 for possible inclusion. Representative McNamara, do you have an amendment?
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, there's actually two amendments, and I'm wondering if we can move the amendments, maybe move them one at a time to get the bill in the shape I'd like, and then we could discuss it. Mr. Chair, the Amendment A1 is yours. Do you want to present that? And
sure.
I think there's been a discussion that I've had with you about some adjoining property, and maybe you can move forward with that.
First, yes, members. For House H0632A1 amendment should be in your packet, members. And before we go forward with the amendment, I'd like to delete lines 1.5 and 1.6 from the amendment. And do you have that, Ms. Helen?
Yes.
Okay. And what this does, members, there's already a shooting facility out at the property in question. Is that correct, Representative McNamara?
That is true, Mr. Chair.
And what this does is, in having traveled and listened to the many testifiers and at the round table, the DNR round table, I heard constant reference to someone or the DNR, the department, looking for opportunities to have hunter recruitment, shooting recruitment, all types of different things to get youth involved. Pardon me. Safety training. And it just occurred to me that since we have it, there is already a shooting facility there, that this would be a place. There's also the opportunity that there's been some talk of having the Olympics here in Minnesota sometime in the coming decades, and there's no Olympic shooting facilities for at least 700 or 800 miles from Minnesota. And so I wanted to make it more clear what the intent was in this particular bill. So that is to the amendment. I'll answer questions to the A1 amendment members. Any questions? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think you want to leave page 2, delete line 2 in, and just to strike the new language, because your lines 2 through 4 expand what is in there now.
All right, so...
But you still want to take out line 2 on page 2.
So can you read the amendment so that the members know exactly, you know what my intent is in the amendment.
Right.
Can you read it how it's supposed to be written?
You would move to amend the new language on lines, on your amendment A1, line 1.5 and 1.6, just the new language there.
So we're going to strike the new language in the A1 amendment on line 1.5 and 1.6. All right, any questions on the amendment, members? All in favor of the amendment, aye?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion prevails. Now, Representative McNamara, you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move the H.O. 632A2 amendment with just one additional word to be added, and that would get the bill in the shape I'd like, and then we could discuss the bill. Mr. Chair and members, on line 1.3, after the word agriculture, insert the word leases, a single word inserted after agriculture and before and would be the word leases, and that's to clarify that our concern here is as agricultural land that's out for private lease ends in this area that we would be phasing out the roads in that area, and it would not affect the agricultural research going on by the university. We want that to continue on, and any roads necessary for those purposes would continue. And to clarify, members, this is, and then if we could adopt the amendment, Mr. Chair, I could go through the whole bill.
Okay, if you just one more time tell me a page in line where you want to add that in. I missed it.
It's just one word, Mr. Chair and members, on line 1.3, after the word agriculture, insert the word leases, so it would read agriculture leases and plant and restore native prairie.
All right, any you just want to incorporate that into the amendment, so any questions on the incorporation? Mr. Helen, you have that?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right, further discussion on the A2 amendment? Okay, there being none, the motion is to incorporate the A2 amendment into House File 32 as amended. In favor of the motion? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now, back to the A1 amendment, my amendment that I talked earlier about the shooting. We need to incorporate the A1 amendment into House File 32, and then the bill will be ready to present. All in favor of incorporating the A1 amendment into House File 32, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed? A motion does prevail. Okay, House File 632 as amended, Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For those of you that were not here last year, this is the Umar property down in Dakota County that Mr. Representative Cornish stood up on the House floor and made a very emphatic comment about that I keep track of this bill, that it's in the hands of the hunter and outdoorsman and folks like that, and Representative Cornish, that's why I'm here. So we're working on that avenue. And what this does, members, is it solidifies some things. You've been passed out, I believe, from the DNR, the Creating Common Ground that deals with the agreement reached between the DNR, the University of Minnesota, and Dakota County. And I believe all three of those partners are here. Dakota County is a non-voting member of the partnership. The voting members are the DNR and the University of Minnesota. They've developed these guidelines, and some of the language changes that I've made deal with some of the guidelines. I think that based on some of the comments of Representative Cornish and others from last year, that we clarify. And that's why what my amendment dealt with, and Mr. Chair, I'll just whip through real quickly. My amendment dealt with on line 1.18 of the bill, it dealt with that we will gradually be phasing agriculture out of the UMOR area where it's feasible, and being restoring native prairie in that area. And when we do that, as you'll see farther along, there's some more definition. Then we go down to line 1.20. I inserted the word hiking, and then after the wildlife related recreation, we inserted inserted of a natural outdoor experience without constructing new hard surface trails or roads. Again, consistent with, apologize, Representative Cornish, for keep referring to, but truthfully, some of your comments were very much intact with what we wanted to see, and I wanted to make sure that we don't have bike paths, blacktop paths traversing this WMA. Mm-hmm. It was a concern of mine because specifically it is mentioned that there will be the potential for some biking activity in this WMA, and I wanted to clarify that the vast majority of it will be held for the outdoor activities. The next change, members, was on line 1.23, and it dealt with the my comments in the beginning about road maintenance. That road maintenance within the wildlife management area shall be minimized with the intent to abandon interior roads no longer needed for traditional agricultural purposes. And then E is just to solidify that the money from the leased lands, this was the intent and it was supposedly true, but I have not been able to really clarify it completely, so I'm putting a little pressure on the DNR and the university to make sure that the money collected from leases on this land will stay with the land. And I'm trying to think, I thought there was one more. And then, Mr. Chair, maybe I could just explain your amendment and my agreement to be willing to bring this forward. I think it will be one that will need to be discussed by the DNR and the university, and they may possibly want to come down and comment it on it. But I think, folks, we have to realize Minnesota has a strong hunting and shooting tradition, and unfortunately our state does not currently have a facility like this. We do have shooting on the land. It currently probably will be relocated. It is kind of in the center of the WMA and realistically may move to closer to the edge. One thing would be the reason we deleted the new language on line 1.5 and 1.6 is it is going to adjoin with a future regional park with potentially campgrounds and such, and those are an important facility to have near this kind of shooting facility, so that's why that was deleted. And it's our thoughts that we bring this issue forward and have discussion with the university. So that's pretty much the bill, Mr. Chair and members. And I do know the university, the DNR, and the Dakota County are here. I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you want testimony from them. This amendment that I brought forward is new to them. It just was shown to them or given to them this afternoon. So I don't know if you want to hear from them or what your time frame is.
We want to hear from everybody.
Okay, let them come.
Testify for the bill, Mr. Tilley.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barry Tilley, and I represent the Dakota County Board of Commissioners, and I'm here to voice support for this bill. The Dakota County has played a role as a full partner, even though we don't vote, and feel like a full partner in all the discussions that go on with the University of Minnesota and the Department of Natural Resources. We are cooperating and are playing a partnership role in helping the management of this area the various recreational opportunities as it relates to our county park system. We are very supportive of the area coming in the public use, and we're just here to say thank you. This is wonderful. We really like working with you.
Yeah, Ms. Tilley, is that your testimony include the amendments that we've adopted onto the bill?
Mr. Chairman, and I haven't had a chance to talk with Representative McNamara here, when I ran the amendments past my County Board Legislative Committee Chair, Joe Harris, he suggested on the hard surface trail you might want to make that impervious surface because there might be some occasions. He says the county has no money to build trails now or for a long time, but in the case that there might want to be an ability to have handicapped deer hunters out there, you might want to have a gravel trail or a crushed rock trail, and that would really be a hard surface. And and we're just afraid that that might preclude that. Though we have no intent in the near future of doing that, but it's just something for your consideration. And we have, and I have reviewed all the amendments. And,
all right. You know. Any, Representative McNamara?
Mr. Chair, I would like to, before we include it in the lands bill, discuss with Mr. Tilley that I think that we want to make sure that we would accommodate handicap hunters, and so that we would look at them.
All right. Okay, anything else, Mr. Tilley?
That was it. Thank you.
Okay. Any further testifiers? Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Todd Iverson. I represent the University of Minnesota, and we are here to testify on behalf of the bill. This has been a very good working relationship between the county, the DNR, and the university. We're very excited about where this piece of property is going. We have seen these amendments the first time a little over an hour ago. I have not run them by our council yet. I think we would like to come and discuss the nature of the facility that you're envisioning and how it fits into both the WMA as we've negotiated it out, and certainly want to be accommodating and talk with you about that. But I'm going to reserve endorsement of that piece of the bill at this point, because I just haven't talked to the folks that give me the okie dokie.
Okay, so you're going to do that. You know, we're going to put this in the lands bill, and that's got a ways to go. So
yeah.
We'll discuss that. So maybe I should put back in the part about the RV park then. So I'm not negotiating. I'm learning from Mr. Meyer how to negotiate, and by Senator Bach, I'm learning all about these things. How to negotiate with the department. Now it'll be the university next.
Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't hear that, but. Okay, Ms. Meyer, you want to come down? Oh, okay. Whomever.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of DNR. If you're going to roll over, hold over for possible inclusion, it would make most sense to put it in the Game of Fish bill rather than the Lands bill. Unless, of course, you're going to have an omnibus bill.
You're thinking on this? We'll Ms. Meyer will give us some thought. Anybody else to testify from the department? Joe?
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Joe Kersinka. I'm the Central Region Director for the Department of Natural Resources. Just want to comment on support for the overall bill. This has been something that I've personally been working on for the last year. Is it was stated earlier, it began with legislation related to the stadium back last year. This takes us to the next step. As part of that stadium legislation, 2,840 acres were to be transferred to the state over a period of 25 years. If on the handout that was provided, if you would look on page 18, there is a map that might help orient those who are not familiar with the property. If you look at that, inside the black dotted line is the 2,840 acres. You can see that part of that is hatched with green. This is kind of our preliminary concept map. This would be the predominant hunting areas. The pink that's up on the north, and it's kind of also blended in with the yellow, that's a broader recreation that's provided by Dakota County. And then finally, the yellow areas are the continuing research areas with the University of Minnesota. As was mentioned by both the university and Dakota County, this is a three-way operation, so all three agencies are involved in management of this. You can see also that down in the red, there is currently a wildlife management area, an aquatic management area, and then outlined in the orange is a proposed area that we are currently in negotiations with the landowner, and part of that would become wildlife management area. The other part would become a regional park for Dakota County. This could be a complex when it's all completed of in excess of 4,000 acres, and a one-of-a-kind complex in the metropolitan area that brings together all three of these entities managing for a variety of public purposes. We're pretty, as a group, very excited about what the possibilities are for this. We are overlaying in this bill the concept of a modified WMA. This opens it up for a variety of activities, which not only include wildlife habitat and hunting, but also a variety of recreational activities and the ongoing research, as was mandated in the original bill that created this. We'll also be requesting that we change this from, right now it's been termed UMOR by the university, and part of this bill changes that to the Vermilion Highlands.
Any questions from the members? Any, have you, I'm thinking about the amendment that I offered. That amendment, the A1 amendment about the shooting facility, that really came from actually a discussion that you participated in. How successful has the department been at finding a location to put in an educational shooting facility like I've described, anywhere in the state for that matter, let alone in some proximity to the metro?
Mr. Chairman, right now there is a single education facility that's up in the Grand Rapids area, and there are none down in the metropolitan area.
But that facility up in Grand Rapids doesn't include any of the disciplines except rifle, doesn't include any clay target sports of any kind.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. And, okay, and I guess that's my only question. Any other questions from the members? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else to testify for or against House File 632 as amended? Okay. Representative McNamara, on the motion, would you like to re-describe your amended motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to change the motion from laying it over for possible inclusion in the either omnibus lands bill, I guess is the way we had presented it, to move it to Chair Eakin's Environment Resource Policy Committee. That would be my amended motion.
Okay. Representative McNamara moves House File 632 as amended to be referred, recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. Further discussion on the motion? Being none, all in favor of the motion, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you very much for your good work. Do we have Mr. Martinson? I don't have my glasses on. Are you? Oh, there you are. Okay. Why don't you come on down? Members, this bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion, and at the end of the all the land bills here, we will then roll them into the main land bill. With me, I'll move House File 357. It has to do with the private sale of tax forfeited land in Lake County, there's a map coming around that we'll work off of. It should be a relatively easy explanation. We have with us Tom Martinson, who is the Lake County Land Commissioner in Lake County, based out of Two Harbors. And Mr. Martinson, to the bill, House File 357.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look at the map, the Boy Scouts, if you look at the lower map, lower right-hand corner, Boy Scouts owned that orange little four-acre piece of land, and there was a township road. There's no township there, so the county was in charge of the road. And because it went on tax forfeit land, it had to cross the Stewart River twice, so there was two bridges there. To the east of that road was the Boy Scouts land, 4 acres that had been deeded to them as a donation. They wanted a different remote spot, and the highway engineer wanted us to get rid of those two bridges. So basically what happened was the Boy Scouts, because the title was clouded, we initially wanted to do a land exchange, but because they couldn't make the title clear, they let the land go tax forfeit. So we more or less had control of the land. But we also, the county board passed a resolution saying that they would provide them with some land. In 2001, a bill was passed for a certain parcel of land that we would have a private sale. But because of a neighbor issue, We worked with the neighbor and with the Boy Scouts, and we identified the land that's shown on the map in the upper left-hand corner. It's an exhausted gravel pit. Highway engineer has no need for it. It's not something the forestry department can manage very well, and the Boy Scouts are interested in acquiring this parcel. So what the legislation asks for is that Lake County sell at private auction the parcel of land there to the Boy Scouts.
Okay, questions of Mr. Martinson? Ms. Lewis. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Lewis with the Department of Natural Resources, Lands and Minerals Division. And we have no objection to this bill.
Questions? Okay, thank you very much. Chair Wanua's motion to lay the bill over for inclusion in the lands bill. Representative Cornish.
You know, I noticed that there was House File 357. I wonder if we can number all these bills. The next one could be 3006, and then we could have a 7 millimeter and
44 mag?
Yeah.
Okay. Be fine with me. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Markson. This bill will be laid over, and then we will vote on it here in a little bit to include it in the DNR main land bill that has other provisions in it other than these individual transactions.
Thank you very much.
Okay. The key thing is that Ms. Lewis has given her stamp of approval to this, and we should be on our way. All right, that bill is laid over. Next bill before us is Representative Howes, House File 1122. Representative Howes. And I'll move the Howes bill to be laid over in the same fashion as the last bill for inclusion into the possible inclusion into the Omnibus Lands Bill. Representative Howes, welcome to the committee, and go ahead to your bill, 122.
Chairman,
1122.
There are two land transfers in the bill. The first bill, the first land transfer would be tax forfeited property sold to a private individual. The county, Crowley County, had contacted me on this, and they support it. I believe the DNR supports it also. I want to make sure with the DNR, because I haven't confirmed this, but there's also would be a covenant or a conservation easement that the owner would be giving to the DNR. So this will stay it'll give the DNR access, plus it'll be in a conservation easement. So we'll
go ahead, Ms. Lewis, explain that.
We won't see a lot of floating docks or any of that kind of stuff out there, so it's a pretty good deal. There's no opposition. The second one is tax forfeited land being sold to the city of Crosby. It's 150 feet of lakeshore, so we need legislation to do that.
That's Section 2, Representative Howes?
Correct.
Okay.
And their use is possibly to use it to drill a well and also have a public trail come through the property.
Okay, Ms. Lewis? To House File 1122, welcome again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The Section 1 of the bill concerns provision in state law that provides that before tax forfeited land is sold, there can be a conservation easement placed on the land. If the county board approves the easement, the commissioner of revenue is the official who manages the tax forfeited lands, issues the state deeds. So the commissioner of revenue actually issues the conservation easement, and it will be held in the name of the Commissioner of Natural Resources as provided under state law. And so that addresses the DNR concerns. Otherwise, DNR has no objections to this bill.
Okay, let's make our understanding for the benefit of the committee. When the transaction occurs between the landowner, who is tax forfeit now, which is the state, and the new purchaser, when the deed is transferred to the new purchaser, it will have the conservation easement on it at that time. Is that what you said? So that there's no chance that the conservation easement doesn't get on there? Or how does that work? And I think I heard you say that the Department of Revenue then keeps and maintains that conservation easement record of that, or who seems to me that I hear constantly some different organizations holding these easements, and there's no central clearinghouse of anywhere where a member of the public could go find out where all those easements are to try to track them down. Could you comment on that?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. What will happen here is that Tax-forfeited land is owned by the state of Minnesota and trust for the tax districts. When it is sold, the county manages a sale, but the deed is actually issued by the state through the Department of Revenue. So in this case, before any, the first transaction that will occur will be a conservation easement. The county board under the statute has to approve the issuance of the conservation easement. It's the Department of Revenue who will prepare the conservation easement. It will be issued to the state of Minnesota, acting by and through the Commissioner of Natural Resources. So the holder of the conservation easement will be the Department of Natural Resources. We record the easement in the county recorder's office, and we also maintain an electronic database of those easements that we manage. And then the county will move forward with its private sale to the individual, but the easement will be in place before that private sale occurs.
Todd, any questions on that? Section 2 of the bill. Section 2 of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the DNR has no objections to Section 2 of the bill.
Okay, I'll renew my motion for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative House.
Thank you,
Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, the next bill, Representative Garofalo. Might as well stay up here, Ms. Lewis. To your bill, House File 1419, I'll move the bill for you. And go ahead, Representative Garofalo, to House File 1419. It's before us for possible inclusion.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, thank you very much for hearing this. I appreciate it. What this bill is brought to me by Dakota County, and what it is, it provides a transfer of a parcel of tax-forfeited land from the county to Ravenna Township. Because, as you know, a tax-forfeited land that is adjacent to a public waterway needs DNR approval. My understanding is that DNR has signed off on this. They're okay with it. In this case, Ravenna Township would like to take ownership of the parcel to allow them to better maintain the land to prevent frequent flooding of the Ravenna Trail. And that's it.
Okay. Mr. Tilley, you have anything on this?
Mr. Chairman, Barry Tilley with Dakota County. The county is very much in support of this, and we want to help out Ravenna Township as much as we can.
Ms. Lewis, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the DNR has no objection to this bill. We could use it.
Thank you. The chair renewed his motion to lay the bill over, possible inclusion. Should happen in just a few minutes.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Pat. Bye.
Nice work.
Good man, good man. Authorized by Dill. What does this one know? The whole bill. All right, so before us now will be the lands bill. This is what is affectionately called the DNR's lands bill, and it's House File 904. So I will move House File 904 recommended to pass and to be re-referred to the Committee on Natural Resources. So we have Ms. Lewis here to explain the bill in its entirety. So Ms. Lewis, go ahead if you'll start on page one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The first three sections of the bill are basically, there's two technical amendments and one minor policy change, which is in the first section, which is section one. It concerns land valuation process for when the DNR is acquiring land or exchanging land. And rather than a full appraisal, this bill takes the minimal valuation process that's been authorized for a few years and increases the value of the land for which we can use this valuation process. For land acquisitions and exchanges, it's currently limited to $5,000, and we would raise the minimal valuation up to $100,000. In 84.0272 subdivision 4, which is not before you because it's not being amended, the landowner has to agree to use this process, by allow the use of this process, so it's subject to agreement by the landowner. The process has been used for a few years. We found it to be very reliable. It uses things similar to what you would know for a real estate agent, such as cost comparison and assessed value information, but it doesn't meet all the requirements of the Uniform Professional Appraisal Practice Standards, which have become quite complex and costly. So this reduces the cost for the agency and also decreases the time in which we can move forward on our land acquisitions and exchanges.
Ms. Lewis?
Yes.
On line 11, on page 1, line 11, that striking 5,000 make it 100,000. How many do you have over and under the 100? Is it exponentially more over 100, or is it less? Or could you kind of characterize that for the committee?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In fiscal year 06, we completed 101 acquisitions. Out of that, about 38 were below $100,000, and the rest were above. So that kind of gives you the scale.
So 60-40 so far. Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
Section 2 of the bill is a technical amendment that resolves an interpretation conflict between two statutes. The Minnesota Data Practices Act provides that the appraisal value is protected non-public data prior to the state entering into agreement with the landowner to purchase the land. And protected non-public data means that we can't share it with anybody. The Landowner Bill of Rights, which is 84.0274, which governs how the DNR acquires land, says that we share the appraised value with the landowner. And so there's a conflict between these two laws of which one controls. So what we're doing here is removing the conflict and saying, notwithstanding the Data Practices Act, we will be able to share the appraised value with the landowner prior to making them the offer. So they're going into the acquisition negotiations with the knowledge of what the value of the land is. And that's restoring it to the practice that we've been following for quite some time.
And Ms. Lewis, you're referring to lines 2.24 through 2.27 of the bill?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. If you would, just for the record, when you discuss a part of the bill, could you tell us what page and the lines in question so we just got it on the tape?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Section 3 of the bill, we're looking at lines 3.12 and 3.13. This is clarifying the state's severed mineral interest law. And what the history behind this is, the severed mineral interest law was first enacted in 1969, amended in 1974, and it requires owners of severed mineral interest to file a statement in the county courthouse and pay an annual tax. They don't file the statement or don't pay the tax, the interest forfeits to the state and trust for the taxing districts. Over the years, the law was amended a few times, and we've found an ambiguity in the law due to an amendment that occurred. And we had an issue raised in a court case in St. Louis County concerning mineral ownership for a party where the new statement was not filed after the interest was transferred. And it went up to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The Minnesota Court of Appeals says, yes, there is a statutory language ambiguity here. It's unclear whether forfeiture would occur for failure to file a new statement once the owner filed, the previous owner filed the statement. It did not say that the law is clear that you have to file a new statement, but it says it's not clear that forfeiture would occur, and that removes the enforcement provision of the law. So what this amendment does, it would remove the ambiguity that exists currently under the severed mineral interest law.
Okay, so Ms. Lewis, the Longyears and the Bennetts and the Pillsbury's and all those people, and the Sabot Trust and all those people are okay with this provision?
Mr. Chair, the Pillsbury Company interests were part of that court case. So they I don't know if they're, we haven't asked them if they were okay with this provision. We feel that it is representing the intent of what the legislature has, that the intent of the severed mineral interest law is to remove the obscurity of ownership so that the ownership can be clearly identified for mineral exploration companies coming to do work in Minnesota, and that the party who owns the severed minerals is paying their tax and can be easily identified by the county auditor's office.
So the way you identify that right now is, for example, one of those entities that own all those mineral rights, they have to file that declaration and the tax, and that way you know who to deal with. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
All right, continue.
Sections 4 and 5 of the bill, and that starts on line 3.17 and runs through 4.30, concern changes to two state parks. And the first one is Flandreau State Park. We have an unintentional encroachment onto state park land. And so we're looking to add 508 square feet to the state park and delete 391 square feet from the park. And so then we will enter into a land exchange with this party to resolve the unintentional trespass. But state law requires that we can't exchange land out of a state park. So we need to change the boundary, and we'll address this through subsequently through the land exchange.
And so, Mr. Lewis, the landowner that's adjacent
in favor of this, right?
Mr. Chair, the landowner is quite in favor of this.
I figured it would be.
Now, the second change, which starts on 3.29, is to Whitewater State Park in Winona County. This would add 5.78 acres to the state park. It is part of a larger land acquisition from one landowner, and he basically wants to sell us what he owns. And we would take this 5.78 acres and use it as a maintenance access road at this point in time. That's the plan for it. But it just makes a nice package to buy from the landowner without having to separate this out and make a small addition to the state park.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll go through each section by section to give you a quick overview. Sections 6 through 27 authorize the sale of DNR-administered land. These are mostly, quite a few of them are small parcels. Some of them are isolated parcels. And by isolated, I mean there's no other DNR land around those parcels. Legislation is being required in some cases because they border water. Legislation is being required in some cases because they will be direct sales as opposed to public sales. And in some cases, we're proposing that the lands be transferred to local units of government. And a few of these parcels also address unintentional trespass situations. In all, the bill authorizes the public sale of 207 acres, the transfer or direct sale to governmental units of 115 acres, and the direct sale of 47 acres. Starting on page 4, lines 4.31, which is section 6 of the bill, and it goes to 5.14. This is this is authorizing a public sale of land in Aiken County. It's 6.7 acres of acquired land that borders the Willow River. In section 7 of the bill, lines 5.15 to 5.28, authorizes the DNR to sell by public sale 34.6 acres of school trust land that borders Gun Lake. Section 8 of the bill, which is lines 5.29 through 6.9, authorizes Aiken County to sell by public sale 1.25 acres of consolidated conservation lands that borders the Mississippi River. This is an isolated tract. Section 9 of the bill, which is lines 6.10 to 6.26, authorizes the DNR to sell by direct sale 5 acres of consolidated conservation land in Aiken County. This is land the DNR previously had under lease, and it was not left in the best shape by the last lessee. And the resolution here is that the current leaseholder would assume responsibility for the site cleanup that's needed due to the use of it as a concrete plant by the last leaseholder. Section 10 of the bill, which is line 6.27 through 7.5, authorizes Aiken County to sell by public sale 30 acres of consolidated conservation land. This is an isolated parcel of land with no adjoining state property. Section 11 of the bill, which is line 7.16.
When you say consolidated, you mean ConCon lands? Is that what that means?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay.
Section 11 is lines 7.6 to 8.2. This is land in Beltrami County. It authorizes the DNR to convey 3.5 acres of acquired land to a local governmental subdivision. This land borders Grant Lake. It was donated to the DNR. It's used by local residents as a day-use park. It's known as Roglin Beach. And it was originally donated back in the 30s by a family in memorial of a son who died in a car accident. And this part conveyance would be for no consideration, but it would provide a reversion if the county or local unit government fails to use it for a public purpose. And what this will do is the local unit government will take over management of the property. They have been doing so for a year under a joint powers agreement. And the DNR has no park facilities within quite a distance from the site and would be relieved of the responsibility for managing the site, but keep it open for the public use. Section 12 of the bill, which is lines 8.3 to 8.23, is in Cass County. It authorizes the DNR to sell by direct sale 37.6 acres of acquired land on Bear Island and Leech Lake. The sale would be to the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. The conveyance may be for less than value, but must provide for reversion of the estate if it's failed to be used for a public purpose. The commissioner may include conservation restrictions to ensure the property is maintained as open space. This land borders Indian Reservation land on Bear Island. It is a culturally sensitive parcel. It has old ricing and maple tapping indications on the land. There's no state land bordering the property. It was actually donated to the state in 1989 with restrictions which have lapsed by this point in time, but it was a donation.
You hit, Mr. Lewis, you hit a nerve when you hit Cass County. Representative Moe.
Actually, I think it was...
Oh, my! Okay.
I thought it was... we got the Nicola County one, because I didn't want to be self-serving, but I just need to understand this process for a moment. Are all these sales non-controversial? The local entities know? I'm asking this again before we get to the Nicola County one, because I'm new to all this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the process is that we go through... quite often on the ones that transfer to local units of government, we've had some discussions with the members before. The ones that are going up for public sale generally don't have any discussions. The ones that are going for private sale generally have discussions. And we try to determine if there's going to be controversy here. This particular one with Cass County, what I would characterize as the one that has the potential to be the most controversial in the bill. Otherwise, this is a pretty tame provision. It addresses particular concerns in different areas, and people are generally comfortable with what we're bringing forward.
If you'll just warn me then, if there's a controversy in Nicola County, when you get to it, that'd be great.
Okay.
And is it fair to characterize that in each of these that are in the department's bill, which is what House File 904 is, that you have... that the department is on board with each of these or wouldn't be in there, right?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. To get personally, we go through every single one of them with our commissioner, and we went through it with both of our commissioners in this case. So,
hey, Representative Moe, did you have something?
Just, Mr. Chairman, just to say that I'm strongly supportive of the transfer of the Bear Island property. It means a lot to Leech Lake, and so I appreciate that the department is doing that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Just a question on that. When you read through this, it says that the commissioner may sell this value for land or for less than the value of the land as determined. Can you tell me why we're selling for less than the value? Or
Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a recommendation that came out of our Bemidji office, and it's a an issue that they're looking at. We are saying we're going to put some restrictions on this property. We're going to require that it be used for public purpose, and we're requiring it to possibly have a conservation restriction. And so it's not a free and open use of the property. And it's kind of a logic to say we want to have the ability, if we're negotiating in a situation like this, to be flexible to say, okay, let's move it along, but we have some flexibility here. So it's a may, it's not a, we might be able to get full value for the property.
And Madam Chair, to that point, will this be open to the public then, or will this be this land be owned by the band?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the provision in this law says that it would be sold to the band, so the band would be owning it, but it is a requirement in the sale that it would be open to the public.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Continue. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We're now in Section 13 of the bill, which is lines 8.24 through 9.26. And Section 13 of the bill is in Cass County also. It authorizes the DNR to sell by direct sale 0.12 acres of acquired land that borders Little Sand Lake. And in this case, the DNR actually unintentionally trespassed upon the adjoining landowner's land when we built a public water access site. And so what we're doing in this case is we're going to be acquiring the land from that private landowner and in return selling this 0.12 acres to him to resolve the situation. Section 14 of the bill is lines 9.27 through 10.6. We have now moved to Cook County, and this authorizes the DNR to sell by public sale 40 acres of school trust land that borders Mons Creek. It's a property that's north of Judge Magny State Park area. It's an isolated 40 acres of school trust land. Section 15 of the bill is lines 10.7 through 10.25 in Cook County. This authorizes the DNR to sell by public sale 1.7 acres of school trust land that borders Caribou Lake. This is property that was left over from lakeshore programs that we had, and we had not sold it yet. We'd like to move it into private ownership. Section 16 of the bill is lines 10.26 through 11.10, and this authorizes DNR to sell by public sale 3.3 acres of school trust lands that borders the West Bearskin Lake. This is property that is also a part of the Lakeshore Lease Lot Exchange Program. I'd like to move it into private ownership. Section 17 of the bill is lines 11.11 through 12.2. This is Hennepin County. This authorizes the DNR to convey 1.9 acres of acquired land that borders Haven Lake to a local unit of government. The conveyance may be for less than appraised value, but the conveyance must provide for reversion to the state if it fails to be used for a public purpose. The land was purchased but never used for a water access site. It's located just north of Champlain. Section 19 of the bill, lines... You know, I missed section... I described, gave you the lines for section 17 of the bill, and I described section 18 of the bill.
So when you're doing it by complete section, you don't have to give us the lines. That's a little more confusing. But when there's embedded language, if you give us the lines.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Let me go back to section 17 of the bill. This office in Hennepin County authorizes DNR to convey 50.54 acres of acquired land to a local unit of government. This land was conveyed to the DNR for wild game reservation purposes. It was due to adjacent residential use. Hunting is no longer allowed on the property due to close proximity to residences. The conveyance authorized here may be for less than appraised value, but the conveyance must provide for reversion to the state if it fails to be used for a public purpose. The conveyance may also include conservation restrictions to ensure the property is maintained as open space. And this is... in the Champlain area near the Elm Creek Park Reserve. Section 18 of the bill I described earlier as Section 17. This is the 1.9 acres of acquired land that borders Hayden Lake that was purchased and never used for water access. Section 19 is Kitson County. It authorizes the DNR to sell by public or private sale 2.16 acres of acquired land that borders the South Branch Two Rivers. The conveyance to a government subdivision may be for less than appraised value, but the conveyance must provide for reversion to the state if it fails to be used for public purpose. The land was purchased but was never used for a public for a park purpose, and this was in Lake Bronson, the city of Lake Bronson. Section 20 of the bill is also in Lake Bronson. It authorizes the DNR to sell a direct sale 5 acres of acquired land. The sale may be to county for a county highway, to the township for a township road, and adjoining landowners for unintentional trespasses. What we have here on this 5 acres is we have a county road going through, a township road going through, and 2 agricultural trespasses. DNR is obviously not managing the property, and we'd like to... convey it to the appropriate parties in this case. Section 21 of the bill is Lake County, and it authorizes the DNR to sell by direct sale 1.06 acres of acquired land. The sale would be to adjoining landowner to resolve an unintentional trespass. Section 22 is also in Lake County. It authorizes DNR to sell by direct sale 0.5 acres of acquired land. The sale would be to an adjoining landowner to resolve an unintentional trespass.
Any of these have to do with that church on Highway 11?
Mr. Chair, no, these are in the Little Murray Wildlife Management Area, and there's a garage on one and a garage and a house on the other. Section 23 of the bill is in Niklet County. It is not controversial. It authorizes the DNR to sell by public sale 7.11 acres of acquired land that borders the Minnesota River. Land was acquired when a new bridge was installed, and this is for County Road, or Highway Road, State Highway 24, so it's near Cortland, and it was when a new bridge was installed and river channel changed.
Representative Morrow will probably be voting for the bill now that he knows it's non-controversial.
Section 24 of the bill is Red Lake County, and it was it authorizes the DNR to sell by public sale 41.87 acres of Volstead land that borders the Clearwater River. It's isolated parcel with no adjoining state property. Section 25 of the bill is in St. Louis County. It authorizes the DNR to sell by public sale 30.84 acres of acquired land bordering the unnamed tributary to the West Two Rivers Reservoir. It was acquired by a land exchange, and it's between the area of Buell and Mount Nyer. Section 26 of the bill is in St. Louis County. It authorizes the DNR to sell by direct sale 23.22 acres of acquired land to University of Minnesota for the AXES NOVA detector project. You probably heard of the university's neutrino project. They have the using part of the Tower Sedan State Park mine site, and this is they would be building a building here, and they're doing their scientific experiments.
Representative Cornish, that would be up off the on the Ash River Trail, about halfway in. They're going to build a $200 million+ off-axis neutrino detector. That's so that the neutrinos that stray can be captured.
Oh, heck of a deal.
Going to employ about 20 people from the university, scientists. Big deal.
Huh.
$200 million-plus building right there on the Ash River Trail. Representative Cornish is pretty familiar with that area. That's kind of his old stomping ground there.
That and the first.
That's a tavern, by the way. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Section 27 of the bill is Washington County. It authorizes DNR to sell by direct sale 31.55 acres of land that borders Long Lake in the town of Stillwater. The conveyance may only be for a level subdivision. The conveyance may be for less than appraised value, but the conveyance must provide for reversion to the state if it fails to be used for public purpose. The land was donated with the understanding it would be used as a wildlife sanctuary. The city, Stillwater, is interested in this acquisition, and they would probably have a bike trail through there, but it is will provide for continued open space next to residential development. Section 28 is effective date is asking to be the day after final enactment. We want to have the bill in effect so that the sales may be proceeded and timely held. And also we are particularly looking at Section 2 of the bill for the acquisition of lands to ensure that landowners can be continued to be informed about the appraised values of the lands when we are working on them with the land acquisitions.
Okay, questions on House File 904 is presented by Ms. Lewis. Anyone? Okay, with that, I'm going to move that we incorporate into House File 904 as an amendment, House File 1419. That's a Garofalo.
Make it all as one at one.
Okay. So we're going to make it all as one amendment. We're going to start, what we're going to do, members, we're going to amend all the bills that we've heard relative to lands and have approved, except for Representative McNamara's, which was set on his own, into House File 904. So my motion would be, starting with Solberg bill that we heard earlier in this committee, House File 1035 as amended, then House File 357, my bill, that you heard about Lake County, and then the House bill regarding Crow Wing County. It has Section 1 and Section 2, that is House File 1122, and then House File 419, which was the Garofalo bill. Move to amend all of those bills into and incorporate into House File 904.
Any questions on the motion? Being none, in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail now. I will renew my motion on House File 904 as amended to be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Natural Resources and Environment, that is Representative Eakin's committee. Discussion on that motion. Okay, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion does prevail. Further business before the committee today?
Castle Dock.
Okay, now members, next meeting we're going to have, next Monday we're going to have the game and fish bill. So that probably won't be over at 6:15 like this one was. That'll probably go a little bit longer. And one other thing, members, and I didn't get this done earlier, and Mr. Meyer's already gone. He wanted me to PR a little the Capital Chapter of Ducks Unlimited on March the 14th at the Holiday Inn East out here on Interstate 94, and that he has tickets available for sale for the DU dinner. Representative Hobby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of PR, probably everyone already knows, but tomorrow at 11 o'clock, 500 South or North, MOHA is having the, weekly, bi-weekly, whatever meeting.
That's the
last one. I encourage you all to attend.
One thing, members, about the MOHA meeting, for those of you who haven't attended, I know it's difficult to work that stuff in, but you do kind of get a pre-committee briefing meeting, whether it doesn't matter whether you're on finance or policy or in this committee, you do kind of get a taste and flavor of the things to come if you go to those meetings. So I would encourage it. And I'm thankful that they moved them from 7 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock. That's a little bit better. Okay, with that, no further business to come before us. The meeting is adjourned.